Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation with Congressman Adam Schiff, Democrat from Burbank, chair of the House Intelligence Committee. Congress in the news, a lot of people desperate for unemployment help. The $600 unemployment benefit per week that a lot of people were depending on is running out. What's going to happen there? We also talk about China, Russia, foreign interaction, foreign interference. We talk about TikTok, interesting news on that front, whether it's safe to actually use it. And we remember Congressman John Lewis together. So here we go. Here's our conversation with Congressman Adam Schiff.
Joining us now from Capitol Hill is Congressman Adam Schiff, Democrat from Burbank, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman Schiff, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
All right. So let's begin with this. In the first rounds of coronavirus relief, Congress passed that additional $600 a week in unemployment insurance. A lot of our viewers have come to rely on that. It's running out. What's the status on negotiations on what happens next there?
Well, Democrats passed a bill called the HEROES Act weeks or even a couple months ago to extend that till the end of the year. The Republicans, though, haven't taken any action on it, and indeed, they don't seem to be able at this point to agree among themselves. They were supposed to unveil a bill of their own earlier this week, and then at the end of the week, and they ended up going home without unveiling anything. So we don't have anyone to negotiate with, and the tragic thing is that we could all see this coming. The virus wasn't going away. The economic need wasn't going away. We should have been sitting down together 2 months ago, but we couldn't get Mitch McConnell to provide or offer something or come to the table. So now we're on the precipice of this vital assistance going away for people, and I think that's just utterly irresponsible.
Do you agree that that $600 a week thing should continue? Some say people are making more money with that than they are in their actual jobs, and it's a disincentive to work.
You know, I've heard that argument. I think there are very few people where $600 a week, that added bonus, gives them more than they would make by working. People want to go back to work. But right now, this $600 is a lifeline to lots of people who cannot go back to work, who shouldn't be penalized. They need to make their rent payments. They need to put food on the table. If we don't provide this kind of assistance, we're going to see a wave of evictions. Some of them are starting already. And so if we had the money, as we did a couple years ago, at least my Republican friends thought we did, to provide a $2.2 trillion tax cut to wealthy families and large corporations, then surely we can provide $600 a week to people who otherwise may lose their homes and lose everything.
Without getting too into the weeds, you and California Congresswoman Judy Chu have proposed some unemployment relief specifically for workers with what's called mixed income types. So explain what that is, how that would work, and is that going to pass?
Yeah, well, in the beginning when we were fashioning the CARES Act and we were going to extend unemployment compensation and provide this added benefit, it was apparent that there were millions and millions of people who were going to be completely left out, and that is people who were independent contractors or freelancers or worked in the gig economy, a lot of my constituents in the entertainment industry, for example. And so I worked to include a provision in that original legislation to cover them, and we were successful, and millions of people have gotten unemployment as a result. But there's a subset of those employees and workers who have mixed income. That is, they get some amount of traditional income from a W-2, and maybe it's a royalty payment. But they would get most of their income as an independent contractor from a 1099. But because of a quirk in the law and the CARES Act, if you got some of both, you ended up getting little unemployment compensation, in some cases, none at all. And so I've introduced a bill with Judy that would solve this problem, we hope, for those that are being left out to make sure they, too, can get the unemployment compensation that they deserve.
So on the unemployment issue more broadly, are we going to get a deal here? I mean, we've seen some optimism in the last few weeks expressed. Are we almost there?
Well, we're going to get a deal, in my view, because we have to. I just cannot believe that, you know, half the members of Congress are going to say, you know, if you're unemployed, if you're one of the tens of millions newly unemployed, too bad for you. So we're going to have to solve this. I hope, though, that we don't leave people high and dry by reducing what we do to the point where still people are going to lose their homes. I don't think $600 is too much to ask for people who are working hard and trying to get by right now. And what's more, of course, there are lots of other important things in the bill that we passed that we want the Republicans to take up. We want to help the states and the cities. We don't want them doing their own massive layoffs, including of nurses and police and others, firefighters and other first responders. So there's a lot that needs to be done. It needs to be done ASAP.
Let's talk about another issue, which is the issue of presidential pardons. I know you were outraged when the president commuted the sentence of his friend and confidant Roger Stone. Now you're proposing some legislation to actually limit the presidential pardon power. How would that work?
Well, I've introduced a bill that has been taken up in committee now to do a couple things. One, it would say that if a president, not just this one, but any president, pardons someone in a case in which they're the target of the investigation or a subject of it or a witness in it, or their family member is, that the investigative files are provided to Congress. So Congress can determine, is the president abusing the pardon power to cover up the president's wrongdoing? But the bill would also make clear that the president cannot use the pardon power as a form of bribery. In other words, you keep your mouth shut, you lie to Congress, and I will pardon you. That is a crime. This bill would make it a crime. People say that the pardon power is unlimited. It's not. You can't use it to commit crimes, and you can't use it to hide your own misconduct. And this bill would disincentivize those kind of abuses.
To be specific, though, where in the Constitution does it say that you can't use it to commit crimes?
Well, you know, as justices have said on various occasions, the Constitution is not a suicide pact. If you interpret the pardon clause as being completely unlimited, it would mean that the president could say, I'm going to send out troops throughout the country. I'm going to have them do patently illegal things. And if they are arrested by local authorities, I'm just going to pardon them. That would make our Constitution a suicide pact. It would mean that one provision of the Constitution was in competition and contradicted another part of the Constitution. What justices do is they read the Constitution so it's not at war with itself. And that means that the pardon power is not unlimited. You can't use the pardon power to engage in wholesale illegality, not if you're the President of the United States or anyone else.
Let's take a moment to talk about the issue of election integrity, something you oversee with the Intelligence Committee. I know you were especially outraged by this particular clip of President Trump on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace.
Can you give a direct answer? You will accept the election?
I have to see. Look, I have to see. No, I'm not going to just say yes. I'm not going to say no. And I didn't last time either.
So we know that Russia interfered in our last election. Are they doing the same now? Is North Korea? Is China? And is the Trump administration doing enough to stop that?
Russia is interfering in our election again. This is kind of an eerie and awful deja vu of 4 years ago. And the president is not doing enough to stop it. Indeed, in the conversation the president just had with Putin, and notwithstanding what we were seeing of Russian continued interference in our election, the president hasn't indicated he even was willing to raise the subject with Putin. To Putin, that is an open invitation to continue interfering. The message to Putin is, as long as he interferes to help Donald Trump, Trump will never call him out on it, and he may very well applaud him for it. And that's dangerous. That means that Americans don't get to decide American elections, that Russians get to help decide American elections. And that's not the way we can ever allow it to be here. The president should be trying to deter the Russians. We should be exposing what the Russians are doing. Now, there are other countries that also do their best to influence the United States, and we should expose those efforts too. But we shouldn't suggest that there's some false equivalence here between what Russia is doing and what other countries are doing. What Russia is doing is uniquely malevolent, and it ought to be exposed. And we're certainly pushing the intelligence community and the FBI to be more forthcoming with the American people so that the public can be armed with information about how foreign nations are trying to influence their political process.
Let's talk for a moment about China. We saw the U.S. consulate in Houston, the Chinese consulate in Houston, shut down by the Trump administration. The State Department expressing a lot of concern there. Based off of the intelligence that you've seen, is that a good move?
Well, you know, based on what I've seen, certainly China has been for years engaged in a lot of malign activities, the theft of intellectual property, the theft of database information, private information, the effort to commit just espionage. And so there's no question that we need to push back against China. What I'm concerned about, though, is that what the president appears to be doing is designed to create a conflict that he can use merely for political purposes. After all, it was just a couple months ago that the same China that was engaged in all these same activities, the president was praising. He was praising President Xi and what a great job he was doing and how transparent he was and how good he was handling the virus. And prior to that, he was begging China's president to help him in his reelection. Now, all of a sudden, completely different message from Donald Trump. Why? Because the first message wasn't helping him with his reelection. It didn't help him deflect attention from his poor handling of the pandemic. So I want to make sure that U.S. policy is driven by U.S. interests, not the president's personal interests, not his electoral interests. And I'm deeply concerned that this whiplash now in the administration's policy towards China is not based on policy, but is based on politics.
One of the things the administration has said when it comes to China is they've talked about the popular app TikTok, which so many of our viewers have on their phones right now. They're suggesting, the State Department suggesting this is, could be used by China for nefarious purpose. So based on what you've seen, is TikTok actually safe? And would you encourage your daughter to use it?
Well, what I would say is this, that, you know, whatever app you're using, you know, the makers of that app are going to be getting some personal information about you. You have some control about the personal information you share with them, but you don't have perfect control over it. When it comes to a Chinese company or a Chinese app, you have even less control over what happens to your personal data. No matter how that company may want to behave, if the Chinese government goes to TikTok and says, you will give me the personal information, everything you have that you've been able to gather through the use of this app on these people, TikTok is, by Chinese law, required to comply. And so, yes, there are privacy concerns. There are privacy concerns with a lot of apps. But when you're dealing with a Chinese-owned app, a Chinese company, they are under a legal obligation to give Chinese intelligence or the Chinese government whatever they ask for, and that is a concern.
So would you use it? Do you think it's safe? Would you tell your family to use it?
Well, what I have told my family, and I think my kids do use it, is they need to be very careful about what personal information they share, because they need to assume it will not be kept private. And in the case of particular apps like TikTok, there is even more reason for concern about that.
So I guess we're not going to be seeing a dancing video of you anytime soon?
You know, for many reasons.
Okay.
You know, the danger the Chinese would get a hold of it is probably very low on the list.
Yeah, yeah, all right. One election question here. You've engaged in plenty of debates with President Trump on Twitter, and some would say, you would say, he wasn't always factual in those debates. There are some in your party that are now urging Joe Biden not to debate President Trump, saying that Biden has a lead, debate's a big risk, the president's too unpredictable. What do you think? Should he bow out of the debates?
You know, there's a long tradition of presidential debates that I think should continue. I think they're good for the country to be able to compare the candidates, so I would like to see debates. That would be my recommendation, but the campaign hasn't come to me for that advice.
And finally this week, we are remembering John Lewis, the congressman. You wrote a beautiful post on your Facebook remembering your friend. You know, all of us have seen John Lewis, the myth. Talk to us for a moment about John Lewis, the man.
Well, John Lewis was a wonderful, warm, gentle spirit. I never saw him say anything in anger, I'll tell you, one of my favorite memories of John, frankly, is I had the opportunity as part of a small group to go to see the play All the Way about LBJ and the civil rights movement with John. The play was wonderful. Bryan Cranston was amazing. But what was more wonderful was watching the audience react when it learned that John Lewis was in their presence. People came up to him. They had tears in their eyes. They hugged him. They embraced him. He could not have been more warm and generous and magnanimous with them. Outside the theater, walking down the street, the same reaction from people, ordinary New Yorkers who would spot him, and just the emotion that they would have in meeting this legend. And he was so gracious, always so gracious, and such an inspiration. He was rightly referred to as the conscience of the Congress, and indeed he was.
Well, Congressman, you know, we will always be grateful to you for being our first in-studio guest here on The Issue Is, but Congressman Lewis was actually our first guest in the field. And we're going to play a little bit of that conversation later. He was such an inspiration to so many of us, me included. Congressman, great to see you. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you sharing your views.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Our thanks to Congressman Schiff, who was our guest on our first show and has been one of our most frequent guests here on The Issue Is, and we always enjoy a chance to talk with him. Also this week, we recorded a special debate between Hassan Piker on the left, Michael Knowles on the right. We're releasing that as a separate podcast. We hope you listen to that as well. We hope that you like and share and let people know about what we're doing. Follow me on social media at Alex Michelson with an E. And we hope to see you next week for more of The Issue Is. Have a great week.